It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now to the floating scums of toxic blue-green algae blooms and why this algae growth is emerging earlier in the season on some lakes and waterways like Lake Mendota than in previous years. There's space for you to join in on this issue. Call in with a question or your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Trina McMahon is a professor of bacteriology and civil and environmental engineering at UW-Madison, research aquatic invasive species. Trina, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you. So glad to be here.
So Lake Mendota, largest lake in the Yahara River chain of lakes, you're studying the connection between some tiny invasive species and a bigger picture about algae blooms in the lake that we are all seeing and concerned about. Why study Lake Mendota?
Well, I'm not sure how many Wisconsinites know this, but Lake Mendota is famous worldwide because it's considered to be the best studied lake in the world, largely because researchers have been in the Madison area studying it since the late 1800s. And it's in all the textbooks. It's sort of the classic example of a lake that has too many nutrients in it and is really green.
Hmm. What discoveries then can you make when you have decades upon decades of data and monitoring and logging more data, like on invasives over a longer period of time? What does that enable you to do?
Yeah, that's one of our biggest strengths here, I think, with Lake Mendota. There are a few other lakes that we monitor in Wisconsin, but Mendota, like I said, is really the best studied one. An invasive species can take hold in a lake at any time. One of the things we try to figure out is why they emerge or invade at a certain time. But because it can happen at any time, you can't really predict and start studying the lake right before and then, you know, right after. So if you have a long-term study program, you can get, you know, the before invasion information and then, you know, suddenly the invader enters the lake and then you can keep studying it and see the impacts. Also, you're more likely to determine that the invader has arrived.
Naming a couple of these invaders, spiny water fleas and zebra mussels that you have documentation over like 15 years. How have the presence of these invasives altered the lake's water quality?
Well, that's absolutely one of the things that we are continuing to study, but we have enough data now that we're pretty sure that the first invader, the spiny water flea, or the combination of both have shifted the emergence of the blue-green algae blooms to start earlier in the season, at least in Lake Mendota, and possibly also Lake Monona. So those of you in Madison may have noticed that we had a bloom on May 22nd that is probably 3 weeks early compared to the historical record. And we think that that's due to the invaders changing the ecosystem, altering the food web, so that the blue-green algae can get a foothold earlier than they usually would.
How significantly are algae blooms impeding how people interact with the lakes and the waterways, like for swimming and with pets?
Well, certainly it just looks gross when the water is super green and almost that bluish color, but it's actually not healthy to swim in water that has that color because the blue-green algae are notorious for making toxins. And, you know, for a human, it really doesn't cause a lot of problems unless you ingest the water. It can cause a rash on your skin. But for dogs, it's especially worrisome because they tend to drink a lot of the water when they play in the water. And if they ingest enough of those blue-green algae, then they can have toxicity to their liver or their brain. And there are reports of dogs having seizures or even dying in Wisconsin pretty much every year.
Your research found a common toxic compound called microcystin is more often reaching detectable levels in Lake Mendota. And the number of days with detectable levels is rising by an average of 50 days each year. Why do these toxic conditions linger and for longer periods?
Well, that is something that we're trying to figure out. Our current hypothesis is that the food web has been changed, that the spiny water flea especially eats the organisms, the tiny animals that are also water fleas. Well, that's their common name. They aren't actually fleas. They're zooplankton. That we think the spiny water fleas are eating those native zooplankton. And so then they don't eat the algae. And so that just causes the proliferation of the algae sooner in the season, which because they make the toxins, it means that the toxins are measurable in the water earlier as well. They also seem to be persisting later into the fall, which maybe doesn't matter as much for humans and dogs using the lake, but it certainly can impact the ecosystem. And that we're not entirely sure why. There's also, of course, climate change happening at in the background of all of this. And we know that as climate shifts in Wisconsin, we're getting different patterns of precipitation, where the rain comes as, you know, larger, you know, slugs of rain. And then there's long dry periods in between. And so we think that perhaps that precipitation change is also contributing to the lengthening of the toxic season.
So many inputs here that could, you know, that are part of this, making it more of a complex problem. Why should researchers, though, pay attention to microbial communities and not overlook microbes and what is happening in the ecosystem?
Yeah, they do go a bit underappreciated, which is one of the things that I try to, you know, rectify because I love them so much. They really are the base of the food web and carry out a lot of really critical services for the ecosystem. They recycle the nutrients. They provide food for the zooplankton, which then ultimately are food for the fish. And I think if we ignore them, then there can be big changes that go unnoticed that could have big implications later. And so the more that we watch them in our research, we think of them as kind of sentinels of change. So when we notice that the microbes are changing, that's kind of that's an indication that the ecosystem is undergoing some kind of shift as well.
We have UW-Madison bacteriologist and civil and environmental engineer Trina McMahon with us, putting these harmful algae blooms into context and the connection to invasives that she researches. Join in at any point. Call in with your question about water conditions, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with UW-Madison bacteriology and environmental and civil engineering professor Trina McMahon on the causes of early season onset of toxic blue-green algae blooms on lakes, waterways. And there's time for your comments on water quality. 800-642-1234 is the number to call in. Let's bring in Paul in Madison. Paul, hi.
Hello there. This might be a little tangential, but it's my understanding that when Dane County takes the algae out of the lake, that they take it to the landfill, and that doesn't seem to be the best outcome for that. I mean, is the stuff studied after it's taken out of the lake? I was involved with a program at one time in Madison to explore using the algae for an alternative fuel source. So I wonder if the researcher knows anything about that stuff.
Paul, thank you. Can you, Trina, fill in the blanks?
Yeah, the kind of algae that Paul's talking about are kind of the larger ones, almost more like weeds. And the you know, they have these almost like weed whackers that cruise around in the lakes in Madison that pull out the big chunks. And it's true that they're very you know, biodegradable once you take them out of the lake, and could be a fuel source. I think the logistics of that, of getting enough to make it worth it, and, you know, just moving it around and you know, all the water that's in it that you would have to deal with before you could, you know, burn it or do whatever you would want to do with it, I think just make it economically not feasible. That would be my guess.
Paul, thank you for that question. Chris now in Manitowoc. Chris, hi, what would you like to ask?
We're actually heading up north today to go fishing up on the Peshtigo Flowage, and spent a lot of time up north and down in Madison. And I see the difference that I'm wondering if the professor could comment on is up north, you don't have as many lawns and farm runoff. So there isn't as many chemicals going into the lake from the neighboring community up north. And you see very, you know, the
Oh, Chris, I think we just lost you. But I'm wondering, Trina, I think we can get at the contrast Chris is seeing and the impact of runoff, perhaps, in different parts of the state. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the again, kind of textbook contrasts that we teach about and study is how a lake transitions from being clear and, you know, what we might call a blue lake into something that's really murky and green. And that process is actually natural over many centuries, if not thousands of years. But humans accelerate that by the inputs that we mobilize into the lake. And that can be from things like deforestation, where the soil then runs off into the lake. But more often, at least in Wisconsin, it's agriculture and fertilizer use on lawns. The reason why that happens is because the nutrients, really it's food for the algae, end up going into the lake. And so they just get just fat and happy on all those Big Macs that are coming into the lake. And they just grow like crazy. So if we can prevent all that extra food for them that is going into the lake, then it won't be as green.
I will forever remember that visual. But so is addressing phosphorus in runoff still the best way to reduce algae blooms? Where can we turn for solutions?
Yeah, this is a really hard problem. And it's difficult because once the phosphorus, which is the main nutrient that the algae need, once it's in the lake, it's really hard to get it out. And it just kind of keeps cycling around and around. And it's also difficult to shift the lake back to having more plants, which is actually kind of the alternative state that we see in more blue lakes, because the algae themselves shade out the plants. Mm. And so it's kind of a chicken or egg problem. You've got to get rid of the phosphorus, but you can't, and you can't really get rid of you can't get the plants back because the algae are shading them. And that's a pretty well studied phenomenon, especially, you know, in Lake Mendota. But I think lake managers and researchers really don't have a good solution yet, other than just trying to get the inputs of phosphorus as low as we can, and then, you know, waiting for the phosphorus to flush out.
Talking about invasive species and toxic algae blooms with Trina McMahon, professor of bacteriology and civil environmental engineering at UW-Madison. Join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. We just briefly mentioned climate change, but how much is climate affecting the chemical and microbial makeup of our lakes, which in turn could trigger some of the toxicity?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question, and the subject of a lot of what I'm interested in. I mentioned before, but I can talk a bit more about the changes in precipitation patterns, especially. So rain, when it falls on the farmland up north of Lake Mendota, or pretty much anywhere where there's farms near lakes, can flush the fertilizers into rivers or streams that then end up in the lake. And if that happens in the spring, especially when the ground is frozen and maybe, you know, some manure has been applied recently, we get an extra large dose of that phosphorus going into the lakes and rivers. And so the timing of that rain, so like when it comes and how big it is really important. And So some years we might not get a lot of rain in the spring and it's not so bad. And other years we get like just a huge rain event in like April. And that really sets us up for a very green summer. One of my colleagues in civil and environmental engineering named Paul Block has been studying the effects of really large scale climate oscillations on algae blooms. So maybe you've heard of El Nino and La Nina. Mm. He uses the surface temperature of in the ocean, in the Pacific Ocean, to forecast how bad the blooms are going to be. And it turns out that we are entering an El Nino phase right now. And he forecasts that the blooms won't be that bad this year, that they may have come early, but the intensity will be about normal. Well, and normal in the Yahara Lakes isn't great, but at least it's not going to be super epic. I think that's really interesting that you can take something that's happening, you know, thousands of miles
yes.
away.
It shows just how interconnected our water and systems and ecosystems are. I mean, that's phenomenal.
Absolutely. I think his research is really, really cool.
Well, Trina, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. I have so much fun talking about lakes anytime.
Trina McMahon is a professor of bacteriology and civil and environmental engineering at UW-Madison, co-author of this study called Species Invasions: Shift Microbial Phenology in a Two-Decade Freshwater Time Series. It was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. You can find a link to that study at WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. Thank you.